He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, a comment, or concern, opinion, viewpoint, or promise about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering how do we beat the high cost of long-term care, and now that I have power of attorney, does that mean I can bend steel in my bare hands? Probably not. But anyway, if you're looking to buy or sell real estate, if you're looking to keep on living in that real estate, if you want to do something with the real estate, if you want to start a business, stop a business, or just keep that perpetual motion machine. Wouldn't it be nice if business were like a perpetual motion machine? You know, you just wind it up and there it goes. You know, you listen to some of these guys on late night, you think that's the deal, but it doesn't work that way. If it's not working that way for you, now's the time to call 888-463-2843, 888-463-2843, and we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. Earl from Cedar Springs did just that. Good morning, Earl. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Good morning, David. It's a pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Well, thanks so much. How can I help?
Well, I've got a real estate investment question for you, and the wife and I have invested for many years in real estate and worked on, tore them down and put them back together and rented them. And one thing you're not crazy about is, well, you know what that's all about.
Hey, listen, you know what? I got to tell you. I love talking to guys like you. You know why? Because you didn't listen to the guy on late night TV and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm going to be a millionaire in real estate. It's like, yeah, I tore it down. I unplugged the toilets. Yeah. You got to do that stuff. That's great.
And I know you've been there, done that.
That's right. I don't have many nightmares, but occasional flashbacks to rental properties. Yeah, that's about it.
Good times and bad.
Right, right. Yeah. So tell me what's on your mind.
Well, I know you're not really lined up, and you're not the guy that really loves the land contract thing, but we've been doing it for several years, many years, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And on an average, we've got, knock on wood, been lucky and fortunate. Everything's went okay.
Right, right.
And that's where the rentals, as they're paid off through mortgages, have turned into land contracts.
Oh, okay.
And that's
sure.
My retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to know how those are protected or directed in case one of us have to go to a nursing home.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, the thing is, now understand, the thing with the land contract, okay, and this is my heartburn with it, and you see, because here's the thing, Earl, most people, I think, are not as, sounds like, as thorough as you are, you and your wife, about screening who it is you're dealing with, okay? And land contract, it's a tool in the toolbox, right? It's useful. It's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad because it's a land contract. I'm just saying that if you're concerned about a land contract going bad, if you haven't screened the people sufficiently, and sometimes bad luck just happens to good people, you know, and they go south. The reason I'm not the fan of the land contract is simply because it doesn't protect the seller as much as it might, as much as doing a lease option does. That's why I like the lease option, because if the person isn't performing, if the tenant, if the buyer isn't performing, well, you've been through the eviction process, I'm sure. Well, that's all you have to do. Rather than having to either foreclose on a land contract or forfeit it with the rights to reinstate and all the rest of this stuff. Are you with me on that?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Because I don't mind being held to account for my views. You know what I mean? And you're right. I'm sort of negative. I am definitely negative on the land contract because I think that lease option is superior from the seller's perspective. Okay. That's for sure. But I'm not saying never do a land. I mean, we do land contracts every month. I mean, it's not that we don't do them. It's just that there's this other alternative out there, pluses and minuses to it. And each situation is individual. So now I've defended my reputation. What do you do? The thing is, for the long-term care, for asset protection, now, let me ask you, have you LLC'd the various properties? Is that how you did
No? No, because I never got big. We never bothered because we didn't grow into a big company or anything like that. This was a part-time thing.
Right.
And we've just done it for a long time, mm-hmm. and everything's rolled fine. And
yeah, but you see, let me jump in there again. The reason you do LLCs, see, if every day is a sunny day, does that mean you don't need an umbrella? Well, you know, there may come a day when it's not a sunny day. And you know something? Two things. If you've been thorough and lucky, you'll never have a problem. Okay, well, most people aren't as thorough, and you can't count on luck. And so the reason we do the LLCs is because, you know, it's freezing rain and everything. You know, that does happen in this part of the country, right? Every once in a while we do get some cold weather and wetness and stuff like that. So somebody slips and falls, and now, you know, yeah, it's just a little part of our portfolio. It's a little part of this and that. Yeah, but to them, you know, it's a broken back. It's a this, that, and the other thing. And now, not only do they get the house, their house, they start coming after you for other stuff. And you probably have insurance, at least I hope you do, and hopefully the insurance will take care of it. But I'm a big fan of what I call the structural approach. Yes, insure against the risk. Get the liability. That's all good. Do that. Wonderful. Maintain the properties well. Do the good things. Oh, yeah, that's all good. But what if it all falls down? Now what? Do you have a structure in place that enables you to deal with the situation or limit your liability? Okay? And that's kind of where I'm coming from on the LLCs. Because, you know, you don't have to do, and this is the key, you don't have to do a tax-qualified LLC. You don't have to file a separate tax return on there. You know, just wrap those land contracts into an LLC, wrap your rental properties into an LLC. Now, somebody slips and falls on one of the properties. Yeah, maybe they come against that property. Hopefully not, but maybe they do. But at least your other properties are not at risk. Your house is not at risk. Whereas the way you're doing it right now, you're on the high wire without a net. Now, you're very good. You did a lot of practice. You know, it's a sunny, you know, the wind isn't blowing today as you go across the high wire. Well, okay. And maybe you make it to the other side. That's great. Hope so. Okay. But I always want to see a net. Do you see? That's sort of my. Oh, okay, cool. Now, here's the deal. Go ahead.
Pardon me. So I start out turning them into an LLC. But
yep.
As far as I am no longer the owner, in the eyes of the township, the state, whatever, they are the owners of the house, and they provide me with proof of insurance.
Right.
On the house. So
you know what I got yesterday? I got a notice of cancellation of flood insurance on a house that's on the river. Oops.
I've been there, done that, too.
I just hope it doesn't flood for the next 30 days. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, but so go ahead. Sorry.
My question is, what's the importance of the LLC when the houses are already sold on land contract and they're carrying insurance on them?
Right. Well, remember what I say about the insurance solution, right? That's my favorite. It's wonderful. It's great. Let's go for it. Okay. Hopefully you never need to use the protection that's afforded by the LLC. Let's hope you never need that. Okay. So I'm 100% with you on the insurance. Also the fact that when you sell on land contract, equitable title passes. That's right. They are the owner as far as everybody is concerned, tax-wise. But you still have legal title. And you might get that property back, and if it comes back with liabilities, I don't want those liabilities infecting other properties, and I don't want you just writing off that property, right, because there's liabilities or potential liabilities attached to it. You know, the tenant moves in 55-gallon drums of God knows what, okay? We've had that happen. You know, we get the property back, and the garage is full of, what's in there? Well, I don't know. Was he stealing from the McDonald's, the drums, grease from McDonald's? I don't know what's in there. And I tell go ahead.
Sounds like you've experienced more disasters than I have.
Well, you know, that's when people come to me. Hey, if you don't mind holding on, Earl, because we've got to take a break for station identification. But you came with a question. I haven't even started on the real question that you have. Okay, but we'll get back to that when we return. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show, where we don't fight authority, we use it. That's right. We don't go against the law, we use the law. That's what this is all about. Give us a call, why don't you? 888-463-2843, and we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. Now, we were talking to Earl, and Earl had a very good question, and I... what did I do, Earl? It took 20 minutes to answer about 10 other questions, but didn't get to what you really were calling about, right? Earl has got a number of properties, rental properties, which over the years, as the mortgages have paid off through the rent, at the end of the day, they go and they sell them to the tenants, Earl, pretty much?
Yes, sir.
To the long-term tenant. Yeah, that's the best way to do it, because those people, no surprises, you know, a lower risk way to go.
Already proved themselves to make the payments on time.
Exactly. And they're used to, you know, it's not like, hey, wait a second, that board creaks. Earl, get over here and fix that creaky board. It's like, hey, you've been living there for the last 20 years.
Yep.
Didn't creak when you first moved in. But, okay, so here's the deal. With regard to the long-term care, you know, what should you do with these properties? Well, a land contract is viewed as a debt instrument that you loaned money to somebody. That's what it is. It's an asset, and you have to value the asset generally at the principal, you know, at the principal amount, and then the interest that you receive on it is viewed as income for the long-term care. Now, what we've done, you know, of course, we're all about how do we make sure that your stuff lasts as long as you do, how do we do the asset protection and what have you. So when we take – see, you say, well, you know, it's low risk. Yeah, but you know something? It's not as low risk as a CD. If you have a certificate of deposit, okay, that thing is never going to bite you in the butt, okay? It's never going to happen that somebody's going to come after you because you have a CD. Now, you're not going to get any money on it either, but that's the good doggy. You know, that's the price you pay. You know, low risk, low return. With the land contracts, you know, you can go up to, what is it, 11%, I think, on a land contract. I'm going to guess yours, what are they, 5, 6, 7% range, something like that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
11%, the good people want to go to the bank and pay me off, and I don't want that.
Right. Exactly right. That's right. So, yeah, so that's the range we've been seeing, you know, in, you know, 5 to 8%, somewhere in there. So that's a very good return for you. It's solid. You're secured debt and everything else. The downside is... that those things do have the potential, unlike a CD, they do have the potential, you know, for giving you a you know, chomp out of the seat of your pants. So that's why I like the LLCs. That prevents the chomp. But it's viewed for Medicaid purposes, for long-term care purposes, those land contracts are assets. And it's just like you're saying, well, you know, why do I have to worry about liability? Everybody thinks they bought the property. Okay, that's true, equitable title and everything else. And Medicaid is not different than that. It views it as that you're holding a promissory note is basically a secured promissory note. That's basically how they look at it. Now, of course, it could happen that you have to repossess. It could happen that you have to foreclose or forfeit or what have you. And if that happens, well, now we've got a different set of issues, right? But, you know, that's not what usually happens. Let's hope it doesn't happen in your case. So what what we would do is possibly suggest lively legal discussion and not legal advice, is we would use one of the trusts that we do, as we do for other assets, and we would put those assets in what we call a Medicaid divestment trust, probably, you know, one of our asset protection trusts, something like that, in order to start taking those investments off the table. From the long-term care planning perspective, okay, I'm like the federal state government. I'm like everybody else. I view those, as Medicaid does, view those as financial assets more than anything else, okay? They're not. There's more to it than that, okay? Because you do have this potential liability. You have the potential for the financial instrument turning into bricks and sticks. I mean, it could happen. Now, hopefully it doesn't, but it could. And so that's just the one more step of planning you have to take. It's like, look, we're getting 6% on these things, all right? Okay, what is the price we pay for getting 6%? Well, one of the prices that you pay is the potential that they're not going to pay, and now you get back this, you get this thing back, right? With the liabilities and everything, and now I got to deal with that again. Okay, so you know that's the LLC discussion, but for planning purposes, we would generally view that as we definitely would view it as a financial asset. That makes sense.
And put them in a trust with the LLC.
Stick them in an LLC because that way, if one of them busts up, then it doesn't. The liability doesn't infect everything else. Okay, we want to isolate each one in an LLC. And look, we do these for cheap, simply because it's just an asset protection tool. The LLC at that point, we're not trying to get tax benefits out of it. We're not trying to do, you know, fancy planning. All we're trying to do with the LLC is isolate the liability per property, per land contract. So, you know, it's I don't want to say how much we charge. It's ridiculous. Everything else we charge is ridiculous on the other side, but the LLCs when we're doing asset protection is ridiculous on the low side. But you know, Earl, it might do you well to come to one of the life plan workshops. I'm telling you, it's just a good way to get this kind of stuff started. But I would, to answer your question, we definitely view the land contract as a financial instrument, as a you know, like a CD, like a mutual, you know, like something like that, as opposed to, you know, something mystical, magical. But there are some things that we would do to, you know, further protect the other assets that you have from the potential liability of the land contract properties. That's for sure. Okie doke.
Okay. Sounds good, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. I love the call. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You know, you always like dealing with people who've done it right. You know, and that's you get these, you know, get people who read the book or got the tapes or something like that. You know, and it's not that's all good. You know what I mean? If you want to do the real estate, that's great. But you know, these people on the TV, they make it sound, oh, you just have to do this, or you just have to do that. Look. It's a tough, tough deal. You have to be serious about it. You know, just hours a week. Yeah, hours a day. Think about it that way. Now, it's true that if you invest the time, if you invest the effort and everything else, the blood, sweat, and tears, they'll have very good benefits for you. In the long term, your money will be invested at, you know, 5 to 7% instead of 1.5%. But don't kid yourself. It's a lot of work. Okay, there is no... You know, God made the world a fairly fair place. It's pretty fair. You know, you put the work in, you'll get the benefit. But I'm not telling you anything new on that. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I like that last part. I was hanging on for the Sultans to swing. That's why I was hanging on, Michael. Well, anyway, we missed out on the Sultan's swing. That's okay. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. Give us a call, why don't you? 888-463-2843. 888-463-2843. Or go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. If you're in Muskegon, we are doing a Muskegon workshop. That's coming up, and we'd love to see you there. Of course, you can always sign up for one of our regular, every twice a week Grand Rapids workshops. That's all right there on the website. Or drop us an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. We're talking to Joyce. Joyce is for the last 13 years. Joyce, check me if I'm, make sure I understand what's going on. For the last 13 years, you've been living with mom at mom's house, taking care of your mom. You had power of attorney for your mom.
Yes.
And now, and your sisters, who were financially exploiting mom, who were taking her money, et cetera, you managed to get control over mom's resources. But now it looks like the sisters have moved in and are using mom's money again, and you can't find out what's going on with her assets. Is that right? Her
yes.
Finances. Okay.
But although legally, like I said, she have, everything she have is legally mine. I got the wills. I even gave it to the court when she had me going to court and my brother for something I never did. My job proved that I didn't do all of this because I'm a caregiver. I take care of older people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing it for about 18 years. And then I got the, my mother, well, you come over here and help me and help live with me just in case something happened and I won't have troubles with my sisters and brothers. Well, I'm the youngest one.
Mm-hmm.
She never gave anything to my brothers because they some fiends. And the sisters, like I say, one lived next door, one lived down the street. Those are the main two ones, the main two that's causing trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, there's a bank account. I don't know what they're doing with it because legally I asked the bank, how did you let them take a bank account out of mine and my mother's name and put it onto some sisters that she don't even never trusted?
Right. Well, is mom mentally competent at this point?
No.
And how do you know that she's not mentally competent?
Because she don't know me from you.
Okay, but has she been found to be mentally incompetent?
Not, you mean through a court or anything?
Well, through doctors or anybody.
The doctors just come to her. They'll know she don't, she just sits around every now and then. She might know something that happened back when she was young, and that's about it.
All right, well, then here's, I guess... And how long ago did the sisters take control over mom's finances?
Well, the Social Security, I gave it to my sister probably 6 years ago because, like I said, you have to keep up with every penny spent.
Right.
Going and I couldn't do that. I tried and had my brother add it up.
Mm-hmm.
He put it in behind the room somewhere and almost had me going to court for that.
Okay, but... We're talking now not so much about being representative payee,
uh-huh.
which is for the Social Security. What I'm wondering about is the I'm guessing it's more recent when they took over the bank account and stuff like. When did that happen?
I really don't know. I just went to the bank probably three, four years ago, and said, "Well, since Jesse have the money, I want to see what's going on." Oh, this bank account been closed, but they wouldn't tell me when. Who exactly closed it, and when they closed it.
Okay, so for the last 3 or 4 years, the sisters have had control over your mom's money. Is that right?
Yes.
And, we went to court. You were accused of?
My sister told a detective I was had two knives at her house, was murdering her.
Oh, okay.
And then she said,
at that point, 2 years ago,
uh-huh.
3 years ago, did the was there a guardianship hearing or anything like that?
No, never.
Okay. So here's what I say then. Water under the bridge is under the bridge.
Uh-huh.
All right. It's been a few years now that apparently this has been going on. Are mom's bills not getting paid?
Well, my sister have her with her now.
Okay.
And nurses that I had set up when she was living over here still goes over there. But I don't go to my sister's house anymore because I don't trust neither one of them. I don't go in their houses. When I see my mother, my daughter, one of my twins would bring her on the porch or I'll come to the door and talk to her, but I don't go in my sister's house. I don't trust them.
Okay. So what is it we're trying to do here? I guess I'm a little bit confused now. I mean, I was thinking that mom was living with you and that you weren't getting the money to take care of mom, but mom's living with sister.
Yeah, the sister took her over there because...
Gotcha. And the sister has the money, and
yeah.
The sister has the mom. Okay, so what is it we want to do? What's the goal here?
Like I say, I have legally, in her will, my mother gave me everything she got, whether my sister's got it or whichever sister got it, by law. Because it was done through a funeral home, stuff was done, where the court got copies of it. And what it said, anything happened to, like I said, my mother's bank account, if something happened to my mother, and my mother said, well, either whoever have my money when I die or whatever, how am I supposed to know?
Yeah, okay, but that's not going to happen. Okay, that will not happen. You might say it in the will.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so if mom has a bank account with other sister, okay,
uh-huh.
with Susie,
uh-huh.
See, the other sister Susie, right?
Uh-huh.
So Susie and mom are on the bank account. When mom dies, there's no reason for that bank account to go through probate. Susie just empties it, takes the money, done.
Although it's legally, everything that she has is in my name, brother.
Yeah, but see, here's the way it works.
Uh-huh.
Here's the way it works. And this is my analogy. Mom, you ever go to the grocery store for a loaf of bread?
Uh-huh.
And before you find the loaf of bread, what happens? Well, you get two dozen other things you can't live without, and you wind up, you know, wandering around the store carrying all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's the same way with mom. She owns everything in her own name.
Okay.
Okay? So she has a bank account in her own name. So if mom is in the grocery store, she slips and falls. Woo, the stuff goes flying all over the place, makes a mess. The janitor, the probate court, comes out and cleans up the mess, figures out who's supposed to get what.
Okay.
The will that you're talking about, mom has a will apparently, the will is simply instructions to probate court. That's
okay.
What it is. That's all it is, but that's what it is.
Okay.
Instructions to probate court for the stuff that went flying when mom slipped and fell. Now, if sister, let's say it's a... I don't know, something with two handles on it. Sister's holding one. Mom and sister are holding it together. Susie is holding on to it. Mom is holding on to it. Mom slips and falls. This is the joint account idea.
Okay.
Now, mom slipped and fell, right?
Uh-huh.
But the stuff didn't go flying because Susie still is holding on to the other side of it. Do you see?
Okay.
So in a joint account, the joint account does not go through probate because it didn't go flying because sister already has it. She kept it off the floor.
Okay.
That's why the fact that the will, the will may say, hey, my bank account that's joint with Susie, I want to be included. Now, you can make an argument that, well, mom just did the bank account for convenience only, et cetera. You know, there are arguments that can be made. But as a practical matter, enforcing that kind of thing is very, very difficult.
Okay.
Okay? So assets in like the house, for example, you need to find out, did mom do a deed? Did somebody do a deed that makes one
I
of the...
I got the deed through this lawyer, Caroline Della Bush, a big-time lawyer. I got it all done in the city.
Well, what you want to do, okay, you may have it done, okay? Uh-huh. But what you want to do, big-time lawyer, I love that. what you want to do is you want to check up. You want to make sure nothing's been recorded afterwards.
Okay.
Okay? Or after the date of your the deed that you have.
Okay.
Okay? You got to make sure that happens because otherwise sister may wind up with that as well.
Okay.
Okay? We just need to – Adam's giving me the high sign here, so I got to bang out. But you really need to figure out, okay, where is the house now? Where is the bank account now? If you're concerned that sister's exploiting mom, then a guardianship conservatorship is the way to go.
Okay, so go down to the city and check the records through the city again.
Well, it'll be through the county, through the county register of deeds.
Okay.
All righty?
Thank you.
Thank you, Joyce. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. We've got Ellie on the line. Good morning, Ellie. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Good morning.
How can I help?
I had a question for you in regards to the scenario that you were talking about, the observation versus admission.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If the doctor writes observation, that's pretty difficult to get that changed.
That's right.
So
that's right. That's why I'm saying you need, and this is what's so difficult about the thing, because look, you don't go to, and this is what I was saying earlier, you don't go to the hospital like you go on a cruise ship, okay? My dad just happens to be on a cruise right now. The Knights of Columbus did it, and he finally said, okay, fine, let's go. But before you go on the cruise, there's the pre-cruise party, you know, which is sort of an orientation, which is sort of a, here's the people in the group. You know, you kind of get the idea of how this works, what's going on. It's not that way in the hospital. You show up at the hospital, you didn't call 911. You know, you're not a complainer, Ellie. I mean, you're not going to dial 911 because you got a hangnail, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's serious business. So you show up there, and I don't say you're at their mercy, but you're at their mercy, okay? And you're not likely to be assertive of your rights. And that has to change. That has to change because the money's tighter now than it ever has been. It will continue to get tighter and tighter and tighter. You know, a lot of the rules haven't changed. The rules are the same. But what they're doing is they're interpreting the rules in such a way that they're going to be denying coverage to people who otherwise it wouldn't have been a problem. Now it's going to be a problem. I mean, that's my take on the thing.
Mm.
And so that's why it's so important when you do go to the hospital to be an advocate for yourself, to make sure that it's done right. I mean, my shining star in this scenario is what my older sister Mary Beth did for my mom. You know, they wanted to put her in observation. Mary Beth said, no, sir. You know, and she's a nurse, you know, and, you know, teacher and all, you know,
mm-hmm.
professor of nursing and all this stuff. So, I mean, for her, it kind of came second nature. Most people aren't that way.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to be, what I'm saying is you've got to be on the ball with this stuff. And it's a shame that you have to be, but the consequences are severe if you're not.
Yeah. The thing is, you know, if you speak up and say you want her in, you know, inpatient or whatever,
yeah.
That's not going to happen. You know, sometimes the doctor says, no, you know, this is going to be, this is how it is.
Right. No, look, this is not a, you know, none of this stuff that we talk about, none of this stuff
mm-hmm.
is Harry Potter with the magic wand where, okay, you know, just say this magic formula. I'm not an infomercial, okay? It's not the case that it's all going to be easy, and it's not the case that every time
mm-hmm.
it's going to work. But you know something? If you don't speak up,
uh-huh.
then you're definitely going to lose.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I would say, well, if I saved one life, then it's all worth it. Well, I don't believe that. I would like to have a bigger impact than one.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, if you advocate for yourself, do you have kids, Ellie?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
Well, you know, if you have kids in school, or I don't know, there's probably a million examples in your own life where if you just accepted what people were
mm-hmm.
saying,
mm-hmm.
you get something that's not as good as if you had, you know, said, hey.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't even realize that they're being put in observation versus the other. That's what happened in our case.
Mm-hmm.
Mom went in through the ER,
right.
And it got admitted as far as we knew. I mean, she's in the hospital for several days.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we're finding out, you know, she's going to be discharged to rehab.
Right.
No, because she's in observation.
Right.
We didn't find out till, you know, a couple days later.
Right. See, and that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right there, that's wrong. And so that's why I say it's folks like you, and that's why we do, that's part of why we're doing the show, is just to say, hey, look,
mm-hmm.
you know, here's an intervention, you know, teachable moment, intervention point, whatever you want to call it. But when mom goes in, that's a time for you to say, hey, what is this observation stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know, find something, You know, I bet you can find, I mean, we didn't admit her because we were tired of having her at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's here because there was a reason, and, you know, you need to admit. Now, maybe they say no.
Yeah,
that happens, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not perfect. But if you don't, it's like my mom used to say, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the problem, too. You know, and when the discharge went home, part of the reason for that, I'm going to guess, is that because she wasn't admitted for the Medicare, then the nursing facilities are and this is just one of those wiggle rooms. Lots of times people go, even though they're there for observation,
mm-hmm.
then they'll transfer them to the rehab, okay, because maybe they do need rehab, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now the Medicare isn't going to cover that either.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got the bill from the hospital, which is god-awful, and then you've got the bill from the rehab, which is, insult to injury.
Mm-hmm.
And now what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you had intervened at the first,
mm-hmm.
at the first available moment,
mm-hmm.
then could have been a very different result.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No, thank you, Ellie. Thank mm-hmm. you for calling very much.
Yeah.
You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. And that is a situation that happens many, many times, okay, what Ellie's just talking about. And it is a power imbalance. There's no question about it. You know, I acknowledge that. I admit that. It is a power imbalance. And it isn't a wave the magic wand and now everything's a-okay and it's every day's a sunny day. It doesn't work like that. On the other hand, you can be sure it's not going to be optimal if you don't step up. And that's the theme of my sermon today. which is actually pretty consistent, isn't it? It's kind of always that way. Here's one email. We've only got a little bit of time, but it's so important. As petitioner of a guardianship proceeding, why won't the court allow me to drop or transfer the petition? It's a whole bunch of facts here, and there's a power of attorney involved, et cetera, et cetera. But the question is, I'm the one who brought the petition for my dad to get a guardianship. I've decided now that I don't want the guardianship, or I'd rather continue to be the attorney, in fact, under the power of attorney. How come the judge won't let go? Here's the thing you got to understand about judges. Judges are like dragons, okay? A judge is a dragon, and the dragon is sleeping. And if you, work around the dragon with attorneys, in fact, with powers of attorney and trusts and all the rest of this stuff, you can get by without waking the dragon. Now, occasionally, you need the dragon's help, okay? And you have to wake the dragon up. Hey, I need a guardianship, okay? And you think the dragon's going to help you, and usually they do. But you have to be very nice to the dragon, okay? You got to feed it whatever it wants to be fed, right? Just keep the dragon happy. And occasionally, this is one of those examples, occasionally you say, hey, dragon, go back to sleep. And the dragon's like, hey, you're the one who woke me up. I got a stake in this thing. I'm going to make it happen. You understand? Don't go to court if you don't have to. You've given up authority. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Looking forward to seeing you at one of our life plan workshops.
You've been listening to the David Carrier Show, a lively discussion addressing your questions and concerns, but not legal advice. There is a big difference. So when making decisions that affect your family, your property, or yourself, the best advice is to seek good advice, specific to your unique needs. If you missed any of today's show or would like additional information about the law offices of David Carrier, please visit davidcarrierlaw.com.